Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in numerous ways, thanks to TJ DeSantis and the guys at BetweenRounds.com, our Between Rounds Radio. I am so grateful for the people who are listening to this podcast, grateful for the people who are kickboxing and Muay Thai fans. I'm going to jump right into it. First, the unchallenged biggest news in all of, not just combat sports, but in all of the world, is the COVID-19 coronavirus and what it is doing to the world and what it's doing to combat shows. So when this first started, it happened, you know, with really a lot of fights in China and then things in Singapore. So it was kind of by the area of most of attention, you know, like where most of the positive results were coming for, most of the infections was happening right in that area of, you know, in China, Singapore, you know, kind of Asia, Southeast Asia. So one championship made the decision to do just shows with just the athletes, just the refs. They still put on the production, and it's expensive to do because if you don't get money from the gate, you're relying upon money from TV. And, you know, their TV deals are okay but not great. But the decision to make this decision, you know, to put the fights on in that way really helped out some athletes to get a couple of checks before they have long layoffs, you know. And we didn't predict that it would get as big as it is. And, you know, I listened to, took the time and listened to a lot of specialists and a lot of people who deal with disease. And it looks like we're more in the beginning of it instead of the end. So we're looking about 2 months, 3 months of more of this sort of thing. So one championship was the first one truly affected by it. They first went with, you know, the shows just without audiences. And then they decided to cancel shows. It was the wisest decision based on what's going on in the world. Then other small shows started to make the decision. Yesterday, Glory Kickboxing decided to make the decision to postpone some of their events. It's just the world we are in, and I think it's the wisest. Here in America, almost all of our major sports and some of our college athletic sports, most of those have all canceled seasons or canceled postseasons, all because they are worried about big crowds getting together. Now, please be wise about this. I took the time and looked it up. And I went to the sources that I went to were scientists, were people who worked at universities. So clearly, be careful about looking at a meme and assuming that you're in bad shape. You know, like just don't let that be where you get your education from. Take the time. You know, there's Joe Rogan's got a podcast where he has a gentleman on, and that guy breaks down the, you know, the coronavirus and just some of the myths that are out there. And so definitely check that out if you get the opportunity. But really be safe. But also, don't think this is the end of the world. You know, if you do get sick, if you are from, you know, 18 to 45, you're going to recover just like you recover from the flu for the most part. Now, if you have an existent, you know, a pre-existent illness, or you are over the age of 50, you definitely got to be careful. And if you are in that group that I talked about, you just got to be wise. If you think you're sick, don't go around your grandparents. Don't go around older people. Call into work. And I know that that is subjective to this situation. I know that some people are, but I got bills due, you know what I'm saying? So I got to work this double, or I understand that comes into play, but we really are talking about the human race. We're just doing things to do our best as a community and as a people to look out for one another. And one of that could be just the wisest move of you staying home for a day. I understand the difficulty, and get checked if you have any questions. If you're feeling really weak, if you have a bad cough, like, definitely get yourself checked out. So I appreciate all the people for listening to the podcast. I'm relaying the information to you that I got from the specialist, so I hope that that works out. On the kickboxing front, the strangest thing so far for all of kickboxing is K-Festa has not been canceled yet. So as of right now, the K-Festa 3 event is scheduled to go down on the 22nd, 23rd, depending upon where you are in the world, as far as start time goes. That is set to happen, no matter what. And we don't know if they're going to go through with that. They might end up, you know, banking big because there's, you know, baseball's canceled, and they might end up being a huge event by holding on, but we'll see what kind of happens. Still a good card, still a lot of good athletes. All the big stars have fights. Masaki Nori, Takuru, like your big Japanese stars for the K1 brand all have fights. So I can see why they would want to hold on to it, but, you know, we'll see if greater, you know, people with greater responsibilities and, you know, politics and so on make the decision to stop K1 from having an event just because they don't want the spread to get any worse. And a lot of people think those masks are saving them. According to the experts that I saw, the masks are not saving you. There's only one type of mask that does that, and that's not the one that everybody's wearing. So whatever they decide in Japan, it should be in the interest of the human race and not in the interest of making money. So in the end, it's do not think of this as a quick dollar thing. Now, I'll go ahead and give K1 the benefit of the doubt. You know, perhaps they've done their checks. Perhaps they think that it's calmer. Perhaps they'll check people at the door. Do your thing. You know what I'm saying? And I want to see combat sports. So I'd be excited to see that kickboxing event still go through, especially with everything that's been canceled between boxing and kickboxing. I 100% understand the difficulties of this time. You know, me, myself, my fight show that I was scheduled to do here, I was going to do one May 15th. Out of wisdom, I decided to go ahead and move it to June just to get past that 3-month period of time that they were talking about. So be wise. And for you guys who run gyms, general cleanliness, I think gyms for the most part are pretty conscious of mopping regularly. Like that's a big part of it. You know, definitely make sure you've got the hand wipes to wipe down the walls. And, you know, understand that just the general cleanliness and general being in of good health, both eating habits and running. Saunas won't kill it, but sauna's good for you. All those things are things that I learned over the last, you know, 48 hours when I just invested some time into this. And then understand that human interactions is going to happen. You know, this disease seems like it passes, according to the experts, it's an airborne thing. You know, it's going to happen through your breathing. So if you avoid shaking someone's hand, but you still breathe the same air as them, doesn't mean you're safe. So just be conscious of things. And again, it's just the wisdom that each individual has to take. Hopefully your landlord or your job understands there are some precautions that you have to take, and maybe your landlord gives you a little bit more time. So please explain to them if you've got to take time off. Maybe your workplace needs a little bit more time. They will change their mind if you say you think you've got this. So go ahead, be wise. I understand the financial situations that people are facing, but please take your time as a group. Even me with my gym, I told my guys, one of the guys is sick. He said, not necessarily with COVID-19, but he said he started to feel like he had cold symptoms. We don't know if it's that or not. So the thing is, stay home. And he did a great job of staying home. I haven't seen him in 2 weeks, you know what I'm saying? So he did a great job of looking out for the rest of the gym just because he thought that that was the wisest thing to do. We need more people to do that. Also, don't assume if someone's sick that they immediately have this. Go ahead, let them get the test done. You know, like my student got the test done. He just got a general sickness. Make sure you guys get your test if you feel like you're in bad shape, you know. And it's just being wise, making the right steps, and just trying to love on, you know, one human to the next by being you know, smart about the decisions that we make with our lives. So let's go ahead and get into the Muay Thai kickboxing action. Yakao had an event go down. Of course, you know how they do it. They did 48 and 47 in England. Liam Harrison in the win column again. He's got continuing his good year. He had the win and his first win in one championship back in January. And now this is another win. He's got a Muay Thai Grand pre-fight scheduled. He's active this year. He's back at it. So hopefully he's healthy and he's able to keep competing. Liam Harrison made himself, added to the legend that is Liam Harrison. He's already, when you talk about the knockmies of my generation, if you talk about the knockmies of the last 20 years, there's a lot of people that you can say who have put in great resumes internationally and Muay Thai and kickboxing. You've got to have Liam Harrison in your top five for that group. You know, now this doesn't discount what you're getting from a lot of the French athletes. Clearly, Fabio Pinca. You guys know how I feel about Fabio Pinca. He'd be on my Mount Rushmore for France. But Liam Harrison is right up there with the elite ties that he's going against. The only small asterisk that you could really put next to him is that it would have been cool for him to spend about 6 months in Thailand and give us a major stadium run. I do think that he is would have been fun to see if he could have had those opportunities in the stadiums in the way that we had some of the greats of the past to have that opportunity, like your Raymond Deckers. So that's the only thing that you can look at and say, you know, it would have been cool if we had that added to it. You know what I'm saying? Fabio Pinca doesn't really have that added to it either. He's got some fights, but nothing like fighting Sanchai and Lumpini. Like, he doesn't have that kind of thing. But he did fight him. He fought all the greats. You know, he did have the opportunity. A promoter brought some of the greats, you know, from Thailand for him, the opportunity, has the two fights with Anwat, has the loss, has the win. One of the all-time great fighters and one of the all-time great personalities in kickboxing, Liam Harrison, his kickboxing and Muay Thai status is unchallenged. I will be talking about this guy long after his career is done, you know, as I grow old. K1 Anoop said something to me the other day. He goes, Stephen Wright is pretty much as close as you could have as a living encyclopedia for kickboxing and Muay Thai. And I laughed about it, but it should be noted that I think as I grow old, I'm still going to be the guy talking about these fights. And Liam Harrison is going to be one of those names. His role in Muay Thai kickboxing is bigger than what he is. Both the painful losses that he's bounced back from, you know, and the great wins, you know, just he is an excellent, excellent fighter. He's an all-time great. And one of the last things I'm going to do before I leave this place, leave this world, is to try to figure out how to have some sort of Muay Thai kickboxing Hall of Fame. Whether I get an online version of it or whether I get a actual physical building, I've got to make that happen before I'm done here. And Liam Harrison is going to be one of the guys inducted into it. He is that kind of special. Adding to his legend, you have Liam Harrison winning a, you know, decision over Kayser Hayat Nawaz. And it's not just that he won a decision. In the second round, he cuts his shin. And then the third round, he cuts his shin again. And he's got two shin cuts on one side, one shin cut on the other. So these are just on the shin, okay? What does Liam Harrison do? Does he switch stance? Does he go to the boxing? Does he focus on his teeps? Liam Harrison drops low kicks and body kicks because that's what he does. He just mans up and just keeps firing away. That's what makes this guy great. He posts a picture. He's telling the story about the fight, glad to get the win, and then he posts pictures of his shin cut. And then I posted it on my Twitter, and I just said, dude, this guy is so man, it's not even funny. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, you are told to do that. You know, if this is hurt, switch stance. You know what I'm saying? This is cut. And let it also be noted that if this were to happen in K1 in Japan, they would have stopped the fight. A lot of fights were canceled, were stopped because of cuts on the shin. But full rules Muay Thai, if Kyle lets him go out there and keep hacking away with his low kicks and blood all over the place, he just keeps hacking away. Shout out to Liam Harrison, all-time legend. Add him to your man card, which is already full. You just keep adding on to the chapters of your legend, and you go out there with the shins. And I'm not saying that other fighters haven't had that happen. I know that there are fighters who've had cut shins who just kept battling through and just kept kicking away. But it's Liam Harrison's resume that he already built before he started doing this, added on to the fact that this guy is just hacking away at this guy later in his career. Still not the guy that he was in the prime, but not far from that guy. In particular, not far from that guy in mentality. Whoever wants it, he's going to bring it. Shout out to Liam Harrison. Next fight on the card. I won't talk about all of them. Talk about a lot of the big ones. Adam Haslam was stopped by Joshua Tozo. Neil Brown gets a victory over Joe Craven by KO in the third round. Joe Craven had a lot of buzz. He had some push behind him. It's you know, he has a good style. People are entertained by him. He loves to play the tie game, but the momentum is forward backwards. You know, I don't feel like people are like, hey, I want to get this guy out there in the international scene like some of the other athletes. He's going to compete still, and he's going to continue to get big opportunities, and he's going to continue to get the Yukawa opportunities. But Brown, better on this day, was able to get the stoppage. We'll see what happens with him moving forward. We have James Ogden getting a victory over Daniel Bonner. I'll be watching this one, these two gentlemen, Bonner in particular, as we move forward, because 79 kgs is a pretty good-sized guy. Want to see if that turns into some kickboxing down the road, because there are a lot of opportunities there, and there are not as many opportunities in full rules Muay Thai when you get to, you know, above 80 kgs and around 80 kgs. But shout out there. Kenahan beats Stephanie Leo Page. I was not able to catch that one, so apologies there. Brian Toddy and Noel Gomez put on an absolute clinic. That was a great fight. Those guys are beating each other up pretty good. Definitely good action. Check that one out if you get an opportunity. These fights are all up Onyekau, like the YouTube, like it's just a 4-hour show. So you get the opportunity, watch it, check it out. It's a lot of fun. Milk is Slick, won by second round KO over Simon Forrest. Glenn Blackburn was stopped by Jack McGuire in the fourth. And then the KO of the both cards for me, Anton Austin, won by KO over Manuel Rubio with a spinning back elbow that just landed clean. Like, there was good action before it. It was a good fight leading into that kill shot. But that thing just landed beautifully. Really, really good stuff. Really good show to check out if you guys get the opportunity. Yakao usually brings it. And thankfully, so far, they've been both streaming the whole show live and they've been just playing out the entire event. Like, they've been leaving up the YouTube page for you to watch the whole thing. So if you get the opportunity, check it out for real, because they really do a good job of what I would say giving English fighters a good platform. And you guys have heard me say it before on this podcast. I really do feel that right now the definition of making it as an English fighter is to get an opportunity to fight outside of the country. So building your resume locally, getting the fight outside of the country, whether that be line fight or one championship, that's where people are dreaming, you know, and they see that as making it. And I am glad that they do, but they have done such a good job of building a fan base and building a the legend that they've put together of their, you know, their kickboxing and Muay Thai heroes right in the country, I think shouldn't be overstated or overlooked. They really have done a fantastic job becoming one of the better places for full rules Muay Thai and kickboxing outside of Thailand. They've put together a great community. They sell out shows. Right now, I'd say England is the combat sports capital of the world. Their shows and boxing sell out, you know, and their Muay Thai shows do extremely well when they have to do like 3,000, 4,000 seat places. I would love for someone to just dare to be great, bring in a bunch of international talent and see if they could do a bigger show, see if they could do a 10,000 show. And wrestling, the AEW brand was created basically off of a couple of, you know, a dare to do a 10,000, you know, seat sellout. And then they had some successful shows and then they segued that into a wrestling, you know, league with a TV deal and so on. But it started off with daring to be great and seeing if they could fill 10,000. I think England can do 10,000. I think they could do that for a kickboxing Muay Thai show. Put the athletes together. I know people have got long-term contracts, but a lot of those are fluid because, like, the one championship, they give you the opportunity to keep fighting, you know, outside of the country or outside of the company. So I think someone, and this is my challenge, some promoter out there in England, get your early start, get a 10,000 seat, you know, area, or something that does, you know, 10 to 12,000 and see if you could sell it out with just Muay Thai. I think you can. I really think you can. We are going to go on to the Rise Knockout. They've been announcing some of the fights for the event and there are some good ones. I just don't know if it's actually going to happen. Same thing. This one is April 12th. Okay. So it's right around the corner. It is a good looking card, as you can imagine. It's got the most important athlete, of course, and Tenshin Nasukawa. Tenshin Nasukawa is, we've talked about it several times. And there's a video that I was just watching earlier today where he's talking about how he learned from an anime how to slip punches and to just, a lot of people take it full. He said, or they blink when a big shot hits them. He says, me, I kind of turn my head to the side. And it's funny because even in MMA, I've got a fighter and her name is April Anguiano, and in practice, like, that's what she does. She rolls with punches or she looks away as they come, and it freaks me out a little bit because in MMA the gloves are so small, but she's able to do it. And in kickboxing, when she did her kickboxing fights, same thing, she's able to do it. Like, it's just some people got that gift, some people don't. Tenshin Nasukawa has got such a read on seeing punches coming, he's able to roll with them a little bit. Canelo Alvarez took the big shot from Danny Jacobs, able to roll with it. Tenshin Nasukawa adding on to his legend. You've already got this young guy who's got all this footage out there of him as a kid, 12, 13, 14 years old, doing handstand and jumping, spinning kicks in his amateur fights. And then it doesn't go away when he becomes a pro. He's still an all-action hero, great athlete, great feel for fighting. He's that deal. He is amazing. And here he is in Rise doing exceptionally well. And I believe he is, this is the first round of a tournament. Now, I see that there are several fights at 57 kgs. Give me a little bit more time. Maybe the next podcast, I'll have more information on it. But, like, the big thing that I'm noticing is he is first going against an international opposition, Andrei Mesentsev. Excuse me. It's my first time pronouncing it. I watched some of his fights before. But Mesentsev will, you know, be a good international name for Nasukawa. We want that to happen. We want him to keep building his resume of guys who are all around the world. And again, you know, he's doing great right now, but a loss could happen here and there. But in kickboxing, it's not the end of the world. If he can keep that streak rolling in this kickboxing world, kickboxing Muay Thai, it'll be fun to see what he ends up being at the end, because he truly is the future of Kakutugi in Japan. So Rise has got him booked, as, you know, well, they should. Isai Ishii goes against Koya Kawakami. Isai Ishii is that deal. He is an exceptional fighter. Very fun to watch. He's so talented. If you get a chance, Issei Ishii, Issei, go ahead, put that into YouTube. You will enjoy the fights that you get from this guy. He's a lot of fun. Him and Koyo will put on a great fight. It's just what I want from the sport. You know, the best doing it. They've got another tie in their tournament field. Kitasak Noembon, and he's going against Ryoto Nakano. I'm curious to see how Kitasak does. I felt like he is an all right addition, but I've liked better Thai additions before. Keisuke Moguchi gets a bout with Yuki Taniaka. I'm curious to see where this fight goes. Not guys that I'm particularly high on as far as long term, but it just takes one tournament to really get me behind you. I think they're all right, just not jump out of the gym names. Yuki Keotani gets a fight with Brady Stalder. Stalder, I'm familiar with him because of his run in Australia, New Zealand. I know his name, not one of the top names that I'm used to, but the weight class is smaller, so that's probably why he doesn't have what we are used to seeing. Also, Shiro and Rasta have a fight on that card. Kengo and Takuya have a fight on that card. So it should be good. I'm curious to see if it goes forward because, like I said, it's in that zone. You know, it's still a lot of people are holding off schools until, you know, the first. You know what I'm saying? Like they're holding off school until April comes around. So they're getting 3 weeks. They're trying to see if they can get ahead of this. I'm curious to see if this ends up happening, you know, just as a fight fan, I want the events to happen, but I understand if they have to make the decision. So I'll break that card down more when we get a little bit closer to it, once I know that's happening for sure. But as it's looking, Tenshin Nasukawa, one of the kickboxing stars in the world and one of the two big names in Japan in kickboxing, he's scheduled to fight, and it's going down on Rise on the 12th of April. We're going to go ahead and go back into a list that's going to have people very critical of me, because I know I'm going to get some backlash for this one. But for my, I won't call it Mount Rushmore, but for my all-decade team from 2010 to 2019, I am now going to do the featherweights, okay? I'm going to stay around 63, 65 kgs in there. I've got four names, with a fifth that I'm going to add just as I do this. Some of these names people will definitely agree with. Some of them, people will say, man, why didn't that guy get more recognition? But overall, I think you should like the list. So we'll go ahead and start off with Glory champion Pech Panmunjom Kyatmun 9. Pech is a great fighter, great left leg, great left high kick, good feel for kickboxing, doesn't get into the exchanges, so he's not your all-action hero. You know, he's not the style of guy that you're going to get from a Rod Tang, who's like, who wants it? You know, Rod Tang is always bringing that war. He's not that style. He plays the game. You know what I'm saying? He likes to let his left leg go. He likes to play distance. He likes to disrupt your offense. And he finds his boxing selectively. Good step knees here and there. But for the most part, he's a left leg killer. He's got some pretty cool high kick KOs. He's got a head kick KO. He's got one over Zachariah Zoghri in a fight that wasn't the best until the kill shot at the end. And he's got another one against Abdel Esbiri, and those were back-to-back. Huge wins there. He's got the win over Robin Van Roosmalen. Had the loss to him, so it was a good bounce-back victory. His current run right now is Ji Li, Zoghri, Esbiri, Nordstrand, Van Roosmalen, Adamczyk twice, Boyanzarov, and he's got a draw with Kevin Nordstrand. That is in simply the last 3 years. Go ahead and take off that Adamczyk, because that would technically be just outside of it. He was a little bit harder to match here, simply because while he's doing this, he also had a stadium run. And in the stadium run, he's got some losses. You know, Muay Thai stopped him with an elbow, and he's got the Shamak Tong loss. He's got the Tassen Kinlek loss. He's got the Wei Ru loss in China. He had a good run there for the he's got a Petch Morakot victory. He's also got a Shamak Tong victory. He's got a Manoan victory. He's got some good ones in the stadium. As I look through it, I'd say his stadium run was solid enough. Samay victory in there, a Saxon victory in there. And he's got some losses in there too, but Korn's very good. But because he gave me a pretty solid resume in a really good stadium field, and his kickboxing towards the end of the era, towards the end of the decade, I think that he is a guy to for sure have on my all-decade team from 2010 to 2019. Again, you're welcome to debate me and tweet in, and I will take your disagreements under consideration, but I really do like Pesh for being one of the guys to consider for the all-decade team. Next guy on the card I'm going to talk about, and he is one that's a little bit more of, I can see more disagreements coming this way because of how he closed the decade, but I'm still going to put him on here, okay? We're going to go with Ku Fairtex. Ku Fairtex, or Sugar Fairtex. He is, to me, if you look at his run from 2010, you know, we could say he really didn't fight 2010, 2011. If you look at 2011 all the way through 2019, from the beginning to the middle, he had a really good run. A really good run. And there's the stadium fights here and there, but for the most part, he did a lot of fighting internationally, fighting in Japan. He just had some big opportunities. He won some good tournaments. He won the Rise M1 tournament, and he did it all with stoppages. So Saman was stopped. Yusuke Sagawara was stopped. Satoshi Taniguchi was stopped. Like, that's a one night of just kill shots. Also, before that, Yodvin Sunua Fairtex, who I'm not as familiar with or didn't pay attention to as much, I'll go ahead and admit, stopped him too. Before that, Li Wei stopped him. Take Kai stopped him. So he was on this streak. 2012? Like, it's 2012. He's got a loss in Omni Stadium at the beginning of that. And then he won six straight fights by KO. That's how you do it. You know what I'm saying? That isn't just getting your hand raised. That's getting people out of there. You got something to do, so they got to go. Deke Watabe, Hideki Tanaka, Jinji Umeno, a win that everybody, I think, has to have if you're going to be fighting in Japan. Jinke is a great, had a great career and is having a great career, still fighting in Rise as we speak. But I think he is kind of the gatekeeper between being good and being great. I think the guys who have wins over him are usually pretty significant. Victor Nagmi, very solid win there. Hiroki Ishii, Hideki Yamazaki, Yuta Kubo, very important win there. We'll talk about Yuta Kubo a little bit more later. Yusumi Soda, and that was for his K1 World Grand Champion or K1 World Grand Prix Championship in 2014. And then he has another win over Soda. He's got the Minoru Kimura loss, and then he bounced back and stopped him in the first round. The Masora Glunder victory, stopping Ilias Blade. That's huge. Like, that is everything. You know, Blade, again, it's a tournament and he's tired, but He came at him, aggressive with the body kicks, aggressive with the low kicks, hurt him with the body work, got the stoppage. Hiroya Masakinori, he's got a win and a loss there. He really was killing it, really the unchallenged best in the world to 2017. To me, it wasn't even in doubt. Then all of a sudden, the rest of 2017 happens. So he gets to April and he's doing pretty good. Then all of a sudden we get to the rest of it and he runs into a lot of trouble. He has a Masakinori loss, a Ren Hiramoto loss by stoppage, a Kweijing Lang loss, and then two back-to-back losses against Rikuyu Ampo, extra-round decision losses in both, some of those debatable. He had a great run, and in between there, 2018, Tetsuya Yamada knockout there, and he's got a Yusumi Sada victory again, I think his third, Daisy Sasaki. So he's had some wins in there, but man, that's nine fights, five losses in nine fights. So that is how he ended that decade. But before it, man, I think that his resume speaks for itself. It might even be the best resume. Shout out to him. He did great stuff. He for sure is on my all-decade team at the weight class. If you disagree with me, tweet it in. Next person I'm going to talk about, and this one was tough to do because there is a gap of inactivity and there is some spots where it's like, okay, am I sure there aren't better representations? I thought that myself because he has a middle of the decade kind of gap where he struggled and then he finished it strong, but he started the decade so strong. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to go with Yuta Kubo. Yuta Kubo makes my all-decade team. I know some people are spitting, you know, food out as they hear that, but hear me out. This is how this decade starts for this young man. Again, the K1 Max still going on at this time. They're introducing it with the small weight classes in the 2011 period of time. He starts this off with, hold on, let me go back to the very beginning. Okay, cool. So K1 Max is getting super fights, stuff like that. So he's got victories. Ozaki is a victory. Yusumichi Matsumoto is a victory. Hiroya is a victory in 2010. He's got the Tetsuya Yamada hook loss, but then he went right back to work. The Kazemon Sega is a very good fighter, who just struggled with consistency, but that's a good win for him. And Masaki Nori and Koyorobe, he beats all those guys in a tournament to win 63 kgs. Shout out to him. That's awesome. Moves up in weight, just, you know, not forever, just for a little bit, but moves up in weight to take a 70 kg fight against Andre Brule, wins that one. He's got a victory over Abdullah Azbiri. He's got a victory over Charles Francois. Yu Yamada victory. Lee Chin Ben victory. Gabriel Varga victory. Masaki Nori for the second time. Dude, this guy was killing it through 2003. That part in its own, Yuta Kubo was killing it. Then comes the rough times. Masaki Nori gets that victory back on him. Asab Imrani gets a victory over him. He's got the Rasikarjan victory in there, but then all of a sudden, Kel Fatrix lost. Yusumi Soda lost. Hideki Yamazaki, Ji Lei, he had some losses. So that 2013 to 2016-ish period had some struggles. Then hits 2017, finds another stride. Gets a victory over Minoru Kimura. Gets a victory over Hitoshi Tatsukoshi. Gets a victory over Mahadragon. Gets a victory over Meslek. Badazarian. I think I got that one. And then Yoshihiro Kido gets a victory over him. And I actually think that was at 70 kgs. So he's scheduled to fight Jordan Piquet next. A lot of people have him losing that fight already because the physicality that Jordan Piquet brings to the table is going to be better than the slickness that Kubo brings. But in my personal opinion, that resume is legit. That resume gets you in. That gets you in my top or my all-decade team. This is one that I'm expecting some backlash on, but he's on there, okay? We are going to go ahead and go to the final two that I have on this list. Here is the guy who's got the most wins with the least amount of asterisks, and that is Chinese fighter Kui Jian Liang. Kui Jian Liang is a very special talent. He's very, very good, but he's got a couple of asterisks on him, and those are he has not fought out of China very much, and he's got some decisions that were close that probably went his way because he was in China. But his overall resume is legit. He's got some big time wins over some very popular names. Really, the the loss is what, Aziz Holly? Like, that was it. That was in Morocco. That probably taught him to not fight outside of China. But like, he's got some also early losses. Just why he's kind of figuring this thing out. He's got a John Thong loss. He's got a Meslek, Badajarian, who I mentioned before, he's got a loss there. Got a Yang Zhao loss. But his victories, he's got a Bovi victory. Of course, I'm all about Bovi. That was past Bovi's prime. But whatever, get Bovi on that resume. You know what I'm saying? A Sagadow victory, also very important. Past Sagadow's prime, but whatever. And then we move up his run, Antonio Campagna. I thought that was a solid victory. Andre Kulibin, of course, a solid victory. Masab Amrani, solid victory. Kulibin again. John Thong again. Ilias Boulay, very important for his resume that he's got him on there. Kim Sitsan Pinong, that is another one of the fights where it's like there's some controversy because it looked like Kim Sitsan Pinong took a dive. The kick didn't exactly land the best, and the way he fell from the blow made people wonder if some money was exchanged for him to take a dive. He's got an Alexei Ulyanov victory. And that guy's doing well even today with victories in glory. The Issam Chedid, he's doing well right now in one. Ku Wasarek, our Ku Fairtex, got a victory over him. Dylan Salvador, victory over him. Yuichiro Nakashima, whose bigger weight class came down, fought him. Dmitry Varants, he's had a really, really great run, and he's had the longest streak of victories without a loss. His last loss was in 2016 against Holly, and then before that, he doesn't lose again until 2015 in July. So, great run, great resume. The only reason why you don't know him more is because he fought mostly in China, and now he did MMA in one of these not too long ago. Hopefully, he gets signed to an organization where we get a few more eyes on him. But, of course, that means he's got to leave the comforts of China. And we'll see what that leads to. But his talent is good enough to fight anybody in the world. So we wrap the list up. If those who know who I am, you knew damn well this guy was on the list. And you knew he was going to be high. My son, Masaki Nori, of course, is on the all-decade team for the featherweight division, 63 to 65 kgs. Most of his career is in this period of time. Like, there's very few fights documented before this. But burst on the scene with these wins over Crush. And again, it should be noted that his amateur career, they note some of the fights from Koshin because he did win the Koshin tournament in 2009. So, like, it was mentioned before that he, because that's kind of what put him on the map. So, he is this, special talent, and he's got some of his amateur fights up before that. And, of course, Koshin was a big deal because K-1 was trying to make Hiroya the star, but he beat Hiroya. So, like, and he beat him in the semis, and he went on to beat Shota Shimada in the final. So, good stuff there for the start of his career before he's even getting paid. And then the legacy, the legend is starting to be built. You have his first pro run, he gets all these victories, not just victories, KO victories. Yusuke Sato stopped. Yoshihiro Shirakami stopped. And then you have Hirotaka Urabe, big time win there at the time because Urabe was killing everybody. And that was when he fought kind of more around 60 kgs, so then he moved up. But like, he was killing everybody. He did have the early KO loss in a fight that he was winning to Yuji Takuchi. Definitely got to give credit to him because Yuji was losing and battled back, and you could see, Nori kind of fade. But back on it, gets the Ryuji Kujiwara victory, loses to Yuta Kubo. One of the most important things that you're going to see as I go through this list is he avenges losses. Yuta Kubo, one of the guys who he lost to twice, he gets the victory over him down the road. Hiroya, he still has the advantage over Hiroya. Very fun fight, 2011 that they had. He gets the victory there. Got the brutal KO victory over Okoye Urabe. My son versus my son. Like, that was rough to see, but it was also awesome. We have the Yetkin Oskul victory. Very good there. Another Heroya victory. The Liam Harrison victory. Now, he's probably losing that fight before the knee came high and caused a cut. But a stoppage is a stoppage. Masafa Mirani victory. Then there's the Yuta Kubo. It's 2013 where he avenged that loss. He had a Tetsuya Yamada loss. And then he goes out and he knocks Tetsuya Yamada out later in his career. Ilias Belaid victory. Huge, huge, huge. Very important that he had that. And that's an awesome fight. One of the tougher fights that you're ever going to see from anybody. But Belaid came out there, was playing his game, his chain combinations, and the style of low kicks and strong boxing that you got from the champ was just, it was something else. You know, well, he was the, I won't say he was the champ at the time, but from Japan's best at that time, I thought that Masaki Nori did great that one. Had the loss to Glunder, avenged the loss to Glunder later. So as mentioned before, like there's just something about him that you get him and he gets it back. What looks like a fourth victory over Hiroya, his name comes up again. And then you have one of the most important things to his career. As I mentioned to you guys before, if you just fight in the comforts of home, sometimes you get those decisions. And he's got most of his career in Japan. And then all of a sudden, he goes to Nietis Champions, one of the great promotions of my life. And he goes to Marcel France. And he beats Eddie Nate Slimani, who was a glory fighter as well at the time. Stopped him with the left knee to the body in the third. That win meant so much to me because it means that he left home and he went to foreign territory and he got a stoppage. Didn't go his way both times. You know, he lost a decision to Esbiri the next time out. But I love that he did that. Cool Fairtex has a victory over him. He got the victory back over Fairtex. Tetsuya Yamada, like I mentioned before, he got the KO stoppage there. Vincent Fanciani, who's now fighting in glory, he's got a victory there. Vincent had a really, really nice fight the other night. Had the Jordan Piquet loss, but he was doing well in the fight. He has the Histon Toy victory and then the Sami Lamiri victory to kind of round out what I'm talking about here. That is a huge, amazing, excellent resume by one of the better kickboxers of his generation. And I believe the guy is 26 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like, got into this so young, you know what I'm saying? And he started building that pro resume so young. I believe right now at this stage in his life, he is still, he could be 27. I could be wrong on his age. Actually, let me check this. I don't want to have you guys come stab me in the street for being wrong about his name. He is 26 years old, born May 11th, 1993. So you are looking at a guy in his prime, still fighting elite level guys, who's going to be a fighter of note for the next 5-6 years. So his fight style, his boxing, he's got like a wiry power from his boxing, his chain combinations, his low kick work. He does just a regular low kick. He does a heel low kick. He does the skip kick low kick. He's just got all these tools. He's one of the greats. He's one of the greats walking around this planet right now. He's a great for his era from 2010 to 2019. If there's a Hall of Fame, he'll be in it one day. So that's my list. You know, you got your Masaki Nori, you got your Kui, you got your, you know, your Kubo, you got your Petch. And these are the guys who I think that history will remember very well. Like, they'll remember them very well. Now, there are a couple arguments. I know some people would be like, what about Robin Van Roosmalen? But if you look at it, his run at featherweight was very, very small. You know, he, you know, lost the title on the scale. Then lost the fight the next day, but really he was only in the division for a little bit. Even though I feel like if he had been in the division at the start of the 2010, he could have possibly been the best. You know, so good stuff there. Glunder had some good victories here and there at the division. Minoru Kimura has some good victories here and there in the division, but as you could see, the better guys usually ended up getting him back. But so there are some names that I missed, and I know that there are people coming after me. You can I have another division for people who are wondering. What about your, you know, Liam Harrison's, or what about your George Piquet, as I mentioned before, and then, of course, Fabio Pinca. Those guys are the next weight class up because that is a division. It's not what it used to be when I first fell in love with kickboxing, but, like, there is a division that's around the 67.5 or 147 pounds. That's got a lot of history in kickboxing and Muay Thai. It just doesn't exist, or it just doesn't... it didn't want me to, it wasn't big enough for me to say, let's just put everybody there. I had to separate it. So I've got one for that weight class and I've got one for 70 kgs. But these guys, I really believe these five guys are the best for that period of time. So thank you everybody for listening. God bless. Stay safe, but still live your lives. Okay. Don't be one of those people out here buying toilet paper because you think we're going to run out of toilet paper one day. You should be fine. Okay. Make wise decisions, be healthy, and take care of one another. God bless. Peace.